Hinterlands is a 1981 short story of technogenesis. The titular Hinterlands are an alternate world from which tools come that have never before been seen here. You access the Hinterlands through a portal in interplanetary space, something that teleports, discovered accidentally, no explanation. Humanity sends sensitive minds to extract something from the place beyond the portal. Each explorer returns irrecoverably insane or dead of suicide. However, sometimes she returns with something useful, a diagram for a tool you and I never heard of, or a piece of something that can be reverse engineered. The first to go to the Hinterlands is a cosmonaut named Olga. The story was influenced by the death of a specific person, Susan Joan Wood, for whose University of British Columbia science fiction class, the writer William Gibson had written another story, the first he published. That one, Fragments of a Hologram Rose, is about a man whose inability to dream finds resolution through the intervention of addictive electronic devices. Without using the word trauma, Fragments is the story of a narrator who has witnessed terrible things in the fragmentation of America by its second civil war. The images of a burning military vehicle and a shot civilian repeat to develop the story's B-plot. Rumination becomes neural feedback loops, hazardous, making demands that a body cannot continue to fulfill. Like Dr. Wood, Fragments and Hinterlands were profoundly versed in sci-fi history. She was a leading expert at the time of her death, in November 1980, at the age of 32. The records of the sci-fi fandom report that she had just obtained tenure at UBC. According to an anonymous contributor to the online Fancyclopedia 3, she'd also struck Terry Carr in the head with a bottle that August. Carr was the editor who gave Gibson his first commission for the novel, Neuromancer, that would, in 1984, neologize the term cyberspace. Wood's death was from a heart attack following a drug interaction. The sci-fi fan community with whom she engaged at the core of her professional practice recalls her declining health. In her letters to her own fans, through a publication called The Amour de Cosmos Quiet Revolutionary Susan Zine, a personal zine, she had described herself as manic, obtaining a tenure-track position by writing to every English department in the country. Her accumulated pets diffused to relatives as her career moved westward. As a place of writing, Vancouver was undergoing its own transformation. The conservative social credit government of Provincial Premier Bill Bennett intensified the process of deinstitutionalization, discharging more and more patients from Coquitlam's Riverview Hospital while funding community housing projects less and less, and evicting vulnerable residents of Vancouver's downtown east side in the lead-up to a sanitized Expo 86. The downtown east side became a spectacle. The irony that cyberpunk anthologist Bruce Sterling would phrase as high-tech, low-life, took shape in an environment where media industries were just discovering uses of that spectacle. For a few examples from relatively recent memory, Gabor Mate's 2008 bestseller In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, Billy Talent's 2006 song Fallen Leaves, and the 1999 police documentary Through a Blue Lens illustrate how media have derived fascination, inspiration, and ultimately enjoyment from Vancouver's social problems. Within this world of mystified neurodivergence and aestheticized trauma, Hinterlands is a story of infohazard, of prophecy, of inspiration that devastates the minds of those who have the correct and unusual aptitude to receive it. The story is a parable, a cliched but compelling parable, of the proximity of insanity and genius, of how finding something new might be impossible without venturing to something that will hurt you. What is the future of this infohazard? What does it mean to make art from suffering? The 2024 Vancouver-based video game A Thousand Times Resist is part of the Chinatown-based media-making community that Helen Hoxie Lung has named Asia Wood West, in which Asian diasporic groups have produced motion pictures about their multi-generational cultivation of relationships with and within this place. The process of that cultivation has involved multi-generational trauma. In the game, an extraterrestrial creature, an occupant whose earliest memory is of two stars destroying each other, sickens and annihilates nearly all humankind by extracting our memories through a process that forces us to relive them until we desiccate from tears. For the last survivors, the remedy consists in a choice of what to leave behind totally, what information to lose, a choice referred to the player who, like the occupant, has been consuming trauma raptly. Another Vancouver sci-fi video game, 2021's Tales Noir, is another story of morbid curiosity, in which the raccoon detective Howard Lotor goes to the basement of a Granville Street club and touches an alien that overtakes his body. The occupational anxiety of the downtown runs through these stories of blurred memory and place, with their deep ambivalence about knowing.
Perhaps it is anxiety for living space that drives the space obsession on the West Coast. The space of the wide cinematic Hollywood aspect ratio, conveying the colonized and heterotopic landscapes of the Western movie. The space of the metaverse, as written in Seattle and set in LA with Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash. The space of outer space and of the word space droned out as the buzzword it had become, satirized in the Portal video game series developed by Bellevue, Washington's Valve Corporation, and the space of the World Soundscape Project, whose naturalism this audio essay twists. In Gibson's work, cyberspace is a horrifying environment. It is a gothic downtown in which tentacles of information pull at the edges of your psyche. Cyberspace scorches your senses, even as it addicts them. Cyberspace is a place made into a drug, endlessly lamenting the process of that making. The hacked voice that you now hear is the result of a misuse of ambisonics, those techniques by which sound designers encode audio for decoding into an arbitrary number of loudspeakers and thus an arbitrary space. Ambisonics trans-spatialize soundscapes. But here, I've taken the 64 channels of a seventh-order ambisonic encoding and routed them into each other in a feedback matrix where compressors, filters, pitch shifters, and other processes confuse the parts of the spatial encoding so that it loses coherency. Yet, when you listen back, you don't go insane. You don't succumb to the spires of data from which tendrils spiraled and lunged as they did in cyberpunk's first cyberspaces. You've come to this virtual place with me, and we're safer here than we might have expected. Not nauseated, not traumatized, although not oriented. This fragmented holophoria, this broken technique of the bringing of a whole space, is not a subversion, not a perversion, not a recuperation, but an anomaly that we have sought and found to be a habitable, if incomplete, uncanny. Although I can't represent it, can't make it happen, only symbolize it, the fragile and pulling dream of cyberspace is the dream of going to the hinterlands to know something of the lost. Hinterlands ends like this.
Olga must have known. Must have seen it all, somehow. She was trying to keep us from finding our way out there, where she'd been. She knew that if we found her, we'd have to go. Even now, knowing what I know, I still want to go. I never will. But we can swing here in this dark, the tower's way above us. St. Olga smiles out at us from the walls. You can feel her, all those prints from the same publicity shot, torn and taped across the walls of night. Her white smile. Forever.